of phone calls from a lot of movies.
Hello.
Hello.
Who's there? I'm talking. Hello.
Hello. Who is this?
You know what this is. This is Jason Bourne.
Wait a minute. Give me somebody else.
Ghostbusters, what do you want?
Can you bring me my chapstick?
Negative.
Just do it.
Hey, listen. Listen carefully. This is reverse call from Air Force One. This is the president. Can you bring me the vice president, please?
Do you want to talk to you?
Hello.
This is Last Force with Wizards.
The worst nightmare. Now, wait a minute. Just hold on.
This is your wake-up call, pal.
Who is this? It's me.
Maybe we should just take some time off from each other. It's not you, it's me, it's what I'm going through.
I'm pregnant.
Terrific.
So you're saying I should worry?
You know how this is gonna turn out, don't you?
You will be caught. You will go to prison. Where do you think this was going?
Slow down. What?
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
I didn't fall asleep, did
you? Doc. No.
I'm not trying to be dramatic, but I would rather be shot in the face and eat this stupid food.
Put that cookie down! Now!
Okay. Look, where are you?
We are at spa at the hotel.
What?
It's a fake hang-up. It's a great little video of montages from tons and tons of movies. I cut it down because I feel like 2 minutes is the right number, but it's like almost 5 minutes long. And it's great how they kind of put different parts together so that it seemed like one movie was asking a question to another movie. It's pretty interesting. So I'm trying to think. I was born in a year that if I tell you, you'll feel funny about it. So I think I turned 42 this year. And so I realized that there are a lot of things that happened before I was born. And I've been trying to catch up. I want you to know that even though I did say I didn't really like history, I sort of do, because you have to like history because lots of stuff happened before you. And you've got to, when you show up, you're sort of late to the party. You've got to catch up. One of the things that I was thinking about Bowling Green, Kentucky earlier, because Elizabeth and I lived there for a while. When we were in Bowling Green, I discovered that one of the things that happened before we were ever on the scene was that there was something called the party line. So the phone would ring, and you had to listen to the kind of ring that it was, whether it was short, long, or whatever, because your household, had a particular ring, like a ringtone, and you would answer the phone then. That was how you knew it was for you. So we asked our friends, like, how does this work? Like, don't people listen into your conversations? And our friend was like, oh yeah, they totally do. And you had to get really good at it because you had to lift off the receiver and put your finger down, and then, you know, you had to be really sneaky in order to listen in on conversations that weren't yours. Someone after first service said, now you didn't mention the thing, but if you did that, the volume level would drop. So people would know that someone else was listening in. So you had to be really sneaky. And so you guys can, not right now, but later on, can have conversations about party lines, and you can sort of help me sharpen my tool as to learning about party lines. But it's fascinating to me that that went on with phone calls for such a long time. Eventually, of course, they perfected it. You didn't have to have a party line. You could choose to opt out or pay a little more. Eventually, of course, the phone company owns the phone in your house, and so you can't control whether it's a rotary dial or not. And I am old enough to remember the panic, the anxiety of having a phone number with lots of zeros in it, or was it nines, where you had to be really good with that rotary dial. You had a nice smooth motion if you ever got halfway and that you jacked it all up and you had to start over. It's kind of interesting what's happened with all the phones and stuff, because now, of course, I mean, many of you might not even have a phone in your house. You had something called a landline, and you cut the landline. And now we all have these phones in our pockets, right? I was at the at the at the place, at the phone place, the yellow phone place, not the red phone place or the blue phone place, but I was at the yellow phone place having a conversation with the guy there who believes that his job is customer service, which it means that he gets paid to make me mad and or less mad or more mad depending on the day. But he's actually a nice guy because we're still kind of on our first and second date. So he's still trying to be cool. We were talking about phones and all the things that have happened in a short time. And I said to him, could you ever imagine, like when they first introduced cell phones and things like that, that we could have bought a computer for half as much money as we're paying for these blasted phones? He said, yeah, and can you imagine that phone does twice as much as what your computer can do now? And we talked about that for a while, and we decided that maybe we should go on a second or third date because we liked each other pretty well. But he's going to make me mad, and eventually I'm going to leave yellow to go with red or something. But at any rate, it's fascinating when you think about phones and everything that's happened. I've been with you, not all of you, but I've been with some of you when the phone rings. And now you know who's calling. Before you even speak to them, you know. Used to be the phone would ring, and the way you find out who's calling is you answer the phone. Hello, this is the McCormack residence. Michael speaking, and they would announce, this is, you know, Team Yellow, and you're overdue, and you've never paid your bill, and we're going to cut off your phone, or whatever. But you would find out that way, right? Now, the phone, the number shows up, and I've been with you when you haven't recognized the number. Some of you have an anger problem. Because when you see a number you don't recognize, you're very upset. Who is that? Some of you say. Who is that? I don't recognize that number. And some of you, you push the red button. It's very mighty. You reject. I reject you. And you'll put the phone down. It's like, okay, all right. I hope I'm in your phone. I hope I'm in the book of life. Don't reject me. It's so funny. Because what happens in sort of the anatomy of a call is someone is calling. Who is it? What is this about? What do you want? Why are you even calling me? And then what am I going to do about it? I have to make some kind of a decision, right? And that's kind of what's going on in our passage today from Exodus. We've got our main man, Moses. Doesn't have too much knowledge of who God is, although, of course, God is working in his life. We get to see that happen in the first few chapters of Exodus. Exodus starts out with a good list of names. Got to love those biblical names. I know you guys are excited about it. Then we hear that there is a Pharaoh who does not know Joseph, and the people are sort of engulfed in this slavery. But God hears their cry. Cry goes up to God, and God remembers. God remembers the covenant. So meanwhile, Moses, of course, is sort of saved from Pharaoh, and he's put in a little ark and floats down the river, and there's that whole Three's Company moment where the mom lets him go and hides, and then they find the mom, and the mom gets to nurse Moses and everything. And Moses grows up and learns things, and then finally sees the oppression of his people. He slays the Egyptian, hides him in the sand. Then he goes back another time and tries to have a moment of reconciliation where Moses tries to mediate between two people, and one of them says, are you going to kill me like you did that other Egyptian? Yeah, we know about you, Moses. Saw what you did. Moses freaks out, has this moment of great anxiety and fear, and flees. And then he goes and, you know, meet some people by a well, which is where everybody hangs out back in the day. And there's that little scene where Moses gets married and has a child pretty quickly. And then we have chapter 3. So Moses is tending the sheep of his father-in-law. And we have this theophany of God, seeing a vision of God. So this is interesting because it says, the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of a bush. Now, is it the angel of the Lord or is it the Lord? This is something that kind of the Hebrew scriptures do from time to time. We're not really sure. But Moses says to himself, or in my imagined version of the Moses story, there's a dog there. Moses says, I must turn aside and look at this great sight. See why the bush is not burned up. So then it says, God calls to Moses out of the bush. Okay, so it's not the angel of the Lord now. It's God. Moses, Moses. And Moses says, here I am. And he says, don't come any closer. Remove the sandals of your feet. This is holy ground. And then God kind of, in the first moment, God is introducing God's self and says, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Moses, still maybe with some anxiety and some fear, maybe a little reverence mixed in, he hides his face. He's afraid to look at God, or afraid to continue seeing this bush that's burning but isn't being consumed. Now, I want us to be really good readers of Scripture. I want us to not read from memory, but actually read the text as it is, as we see it. Because sometimes I think what we get in the habit of doing, and I'm very guilty of this too, is I sort of read over it, and I miss the nooks and crannies. I sort of have like a trowel in my mind with some grout on it, and I just kind of smear over the top of the Scripture, and I smear over things that might actually, if I stopped and spent a little time in those little moments, those little nooks and crannies, those little crevasses and seams, I might get something out of it, something a little of more depth and that has deeper roots than just kind of a surface, superficial reading, right? So I noticed that God introduces God's self to Moses, but doesn't really say very much about who he is. I'm the God of your father, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You need to know who Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are, Moses, because I'm the God of your ancestors. But God doesn't say much about himself, just says, well, I'm connected to those guys. If you know those guys, you can trust me. You know who I am. So even as God tells Moses who he is, in this revelation, there's also a kind of hiddenness about it. There's a veil that's pulled over. You see that? And so this is sort of a story of God revealing God's self, but also hiding God's self to a certain degree. God keeps going and says, I've observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I've come down to deliver them from the Egyptians and to bring them out to the land flowing with milk and honey, a land filled with a long list of people that lay readers forever will have to struggle with. Good job. Good job today. So come, now we get to the moment. So come, Moses, I will send you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. Well, now Moses has sort of caught up with himself. He might not have been listening to much of that, but he's caught up with himself enough to have the presence of mind to ask a question. So Moses says, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? Who am I? And have you ever noticed that God says, I will be with you? That's not what Moses asked, right? So, you know, If God answers the question, well, who am I to send you? God could have said, well, I have chosen you. God could say some really scriptury, Bible-y stuff. I have known you before you were born. And you could quote a psalm, or, you know, he could lift something from Jeremiah and plop it in there. He could say something, right? But God sort of disregards. Who am I that you should choose me to go to Pharaoh? Don't worry, I'll be with you. And if you need proof, there's a little moment of proof. If you need a sign, when you bring the people out, after everything's gone so great, after you bring the people out, you'll come and you'll worship me on this mountain. Okay, well, that didn't go great. Moses has another question. But Moses says to God, if I come to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your ancestors has sent me to you. Now Moses sort of digs in a little bit on this idea of who God is and sort of exposes that the God of our ancestors might not say as much as we think it does. If I say the God of our ancestors has sent me to you, and they ask me what is his name, what shall I say to them? And God says to Moses, I am who I am. Now, in your pew Bible, there's a little letter, and you know that I love it when there's little letters. Little letters are important, and it's a little letter E. So if you go down, it says, or I am what I am, or I will be what I will be. So this is the divine name. This is the idea that the God has always been, God is, God will always be. I will be who I've been. I am who I am. This is not a Popeye moment in the scriptures. Stop it. No spinach was harmed in the making of this scriptural movie. So I am who I've always been. I am who I am now. I will be who I will always be. I'm enduring. I'm lasting. I'm the everlasting one. I'm he who is. I am the one who is. Right? And then it says, we keep going here. God also said to Moses, thus you shall say to the Israelites, the Lord, little capital F. Well, here's the real divine name. The word, and then it says in the notes, the word Lord, which is when spelled with capital letters, stands for the divine name, YHWH, which is here connected with the verb Hayah, to be. So some people pronounce YHWH as Yahweh or Jehovah, right? The German folks, Jehovah. Or sometimes people say, well, you shouldn't say that. You could say Adonai, which means, I think, Lord. Or you can say instead maybe the name, Hashem. Or you've seen G-D for God, right, to show the reverence related to that. It's always tough for church secretaries everywhere because they've got to find out how to make a capital L and then find the lowercase capitals. How do you find the lowercase? Where? And they go looking and stuff and spend 75 minutes trying to find that, and it cracks me up. So once you do find that, you should tell everyone about it. But the Lord, the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. And then we have a little moment of sort of poetry here. This is my name forever. This is my title for all generations. So there's sort of a revealing of who God is, but we also don't entirely know. As Moses sort of looks at the phone, he kind of gets an idea of who's calling him, but not entirely. God is still a mystery. Sure, God is the God of our ancestors. God is the one who's always been and who is and who will always be, but we don't know completely who God is. This is sort of the mystery of God. And there's a couple other readings that we're talking about today. I mean, I love this reading from Deuteronomy. And the end, after Moses in Deuteronomy is telling the people not to make any graven images, sort of drops this in at the end. It's sort of the mic drop moment. For the Lord your God is a devouring fire, a jealous God. Not the Lord is like a devouring fire. The Lord is a devouring fire. I mean, we sort of pass over the fact that God appears in this burning bush. We sort of say, oh, it's great, it's a burning bush. You can make church banners with burning bushes and children's moments, and it's great. But what if this burning bush tells us more about God than we realize? What if that's the moment to dwell on, that God is a consuming fire, that God is jealous, that even though we all want to make God our buddy, you know, Jesus is our best friend, God is our buddy, but what if God is a consuming fire? What if God is jealous and zealous and passionate and wants to consume us, wants our full allegiance? What if God has an overpowering plan for us and just the thought of it is too much? What if maybe that bush didn't burn, but if Moses has this kind of anxiety, what will happen to my life if I accept this call? What will happen to my life if this zealous, jealous, passionate God consumes me? What will happen? I don't know. That's what we might struggle with. And so we're not entirely sure who God is, and we're not entirely sure what this has to do with us. What does God want us to do? And so that's the next piece is God says, I remember the covenant, and I have heard the cries of my people. And so this call to Moses is sort of a prophetic call. Moses needs to be about God's ministry of liberation and freeing the people from captivity. Well, what's this got to do with us? Well, we've got to figure out, where do we experience captivity in our own lives? We have to start with ourselves. Where do we need liberation? Where do we need freedom? Are we perfectionists? And we need to be released from that jail of a word, should. I should do that. I should have done this. Are we sort of codependent? And we realize that we've been trying to save the world. And guess what? There's already been a Messiah and you ain't it. Are we addicted to work and achievement all the time? Is that where you're trapped? Is that your Egypt? Is that your what was that? What was the line? Such a great image. The Lord has taken you and brought you out of the iron smelter, Egypt. You know, that's a dark image. Where are you? Is that consumerism for you? Are you always looking for bigger, better, faster, more? Are you aware that people are in line right now for the iPhone 8? Do you want to join that line? Would you like to get up and run from this room and find the line for the iPhone 8 so that you could be the first person? There is that. We're kind of addicted to a lot of different things. Are you really angry? And you're just not sure how to let go of that? We all face kind of these Egypts personally, these moments of being in need of freedom, in need of being liberated. And the great irony of the scriptures is that we're only liberated and free when we are obeying God. That's the great irony and the great sort of, you know, two-handedness of it all. And so we kind of have a sense of who God is, but we know God is more than that. We sort of have a sense of maybe what God is calling to us to do. Of course, individually, we are called to greater freedom, but we're also called to sort of corporate freedom and corporate liberation. Of course, this terrible thing's happened in Houston. We're thinking about how we can be involved in that, and social media is very active. You know, you should send this, you shouldn't send that, you should send the other thing that we said, and we're all figuring out, well, how can we help, and what is Presbyterian Disaster Assistance, what are they doing? There is a sense that we can be involved in corporate freedom and liberation from captivity that happens on a bigger scale than just us. But this is the last moment of the phone call when we figure out, well, who's this? What do you want? And then we have to figure out, well, what am I going to do about it? How am I going to make this impact me? How am I going to allow this to impact me? What sort of decisions am I going to make? Moses did it. Peter did it. Jesus did it. And now we have to figure out, what will we do? How will we be faithful to this calling to which we've been called that we're not completely 100% sure on? And how will we answer this voice that calls us out of a burning bush? How will we answer that voice, the voice that we're getting to know better and better, but we're not 100%? That action is called faith. And this is what we're called to be about today, and tomorrow and forever. Amen.